So I'm back. I'm live. So we're even working our way this year through the wisdom of Proverbs. And our goal is not to master that wisdom. Our goal is to be mastered by the wisdom of Proverbs. And Proverbs 8 and 9, the chapters where we're going to kind of look at an overview of today, those wrap up the major section of Proverbs, which is a long introduction. And that chapters 1 through 9 are longer narratives, and those chapters are designed to introduce us to wisdom and folly, the two-path life. And what follows chapter 9 are individual proverbs and small groups of proverbs about various life issues. And so next month, we're going to look at the wisdom of Jesus, and then after that, we'll look at Proverbs topically. Today, we finish our time in the book's long introduction. Chapter 8 is wisdom's strong invitation to enter into personal relationship with her, and then there's a biographical section giving her credentials. And chapter 9 again gives Lady Wisdom a voice and us a choice, but it also gives Woman Folly the chance to speak for herself. She offers an invitation to relationship, and then she gives her resume. It's a pretty pathetic resume, but we'll get it anyway. In these first two chapters, Wisdom and Folly are poetic personifications of two realities in the world. Wisdom exists, folly exists. Wisdom is to walk in the will and ways of God. Folly is to walk outside the will and ways of God. And in the introductory chapters of Proverbs, wisdom is poetically turned into a person so we can think about what it really means to be wise. It's not just knowing stuff. It's not just being smart. Wisdom is skillful living that flows from relationship with God. And so in Proverbs 8 and 9, wisdom and folly are seen as someone we can have a relationship with. So becoming wise is more like marrying wisdom rather than going to wisdom school. And as we move through these two chapters, we're going to look at three things. So first, it's not difficult to enter into relationship with wisdom or folly. And that might be a bit surprising because we tend to think that wisdom is super hard and folly is super easy, but actually wisdom is quite readily available to anyone who wants it. You don't have to be a genius or a saint. You only have to want to have relationship with wisdom. Folly, of course, will take anyone who will have her. Then number two, wisdom and folly have both shown us their resumes. They're both very open and honest about what they offer, who they are. And this is also a bit surprising because you might think folly would not be honest with who she is, because if she were, you would think nobody would follow her. But she's quite unashamed of herself. In fact, she's quite proud of herself. She's just not very honest about what happens when people do enter into a relationship with her. So wisdom, of course, is always open and honest about who she is and what the cost is. And you can say, well, what cost? Terry, I thought you said it wasn't difficult to have a relationship with wisdom or folly. It isn't difficult, but it is costly. It's costly to gain wisdom, and it's, of course, costly to have a relationship with folly as well. And so we'll look at their biographies or resumes to see what each of them has to offer. And then finally, number three, we're going to look at how both wisdom and folly tell us to choose and to keep on choosing what we're going to give our lives to. In the end, we have to decide and keep on deciding which path we're going to take. And so we can't just engage this content with our minds and then go away and not choose. Every single day is a series of ongoing choices. Every single life is a long walk in a direction towards wisdom or folly, and that walk consists of many choices. And so for the Christian, this long walk, the technical term for it is sanctification. It's this collaborative process of becoming more like Christ over time. And so all of us are going to choose. That you can say, well, I choose not to choose. That's a choice. All of us are choosing. Let's look at those three things in more depth. First, it's not difficult to enter into a relationship with wisdom or folly. Look at Proverbs 8, chapter 8, verse 1. Does not wisdom call out? Does not understanding raise her voice? And then verse 17, I love those who love me, and those who seek me find me. Pretty straightforward offer. Seek and find. That's a much better deal than toilet paper these days. There have been many who have sought it but have not found it. But wisdom says, I will never run out of supply. All who seek will find. And the same is true for folly. Look at chapter 9, verse 13 and following. Woman folly is loud. She's undisciplined, without knowledge. She sits at the door of her house, and she shouts out, hey, come on in. Anyone who wants to can come in. So it's not hard, it's not complicated, just walk into her house and take her up on the offer. But as I said, although it's not hard to have a relationship with wisdom or folly, it is costly. So how can that be? Well, let me give you a parable to demonstrate how something can be easy and costly. Matthew 13, the kingdom of heaven is like a treasure hidden in a field. When a man found it, he hid it again, and then in his joy went and sold all he had and bought that field. So what do you see here? Great joy and great cost. So if you ask a man, was it hard to purchase the field? He would say, no way. It was joy. If you ask a man, was it costly to purchase a field? He would say, yes, it cost me everything. And so in Proverbs 4:7, you find wisdom is supreme. Therefore, get wisdom, though it costs you all you have. And so what's folly's cost? It's the same as wisdom's. Both cost you everything. Go back to chapter 9, and first look at what folly offers. She offers illicit excitement, forbidden fruit. Stolen water is sweet. Food eaten in secret is delicious. And so she's honest about what she offers. She offers the wrong thing. Sometimes she offers the right thing at the wrong time, which is still wrong. And the wrong thing often tastes sweet initially. The thought of the illicit, the forbidden, is exciting. The thought of doing the wrong thing sometimes makes the heart rate go up. It breaks the boredom of life. It adds excitement to normality. And I fear for our culture that the many sin patterns are going to rise now because of isolation and boredom. Social isolation is a great time of opportunity for woman folly. But then there's her hidden cost. Verse 18, but little do they know, in other words, she's not advertising this, little do they know the dead are there, the ones who take her up on her offer, that her guests are in the depths of the grave. So what's the cost of wisdom? Everything. She demands your life. What's the cost of folly? Everything. She demands your life. All this is a poetic way of saying we are all always giving our lives away. We're either spending them or wasting them because we're not going to save our lives. No one gets out alive. But we get to decide if we will spend our lives on wisdom or waste our lives on folly. So there's the cost. The cost is your life. But back to the main point, wisdom is not hard to obtain. Not in a real sense. So don't convince yourself that this life of thriving inside God's will is just too difficult. It's just beyond your capabilities. It's not. Now, on your own, it's impossible, but God's not offering us wisdom as something we must do alone. God himself is offering, along with the opportunity for wisdom, the power to obtain it and retain it. And this time of isolation is not just an opportunity for woman folly. It's a time of opportunity to get to know Lady Wisdom better. It's our choice. Okay, number two, wisdom and folly have both shown us their resumes. They're both open and honest about what they offer. Now, wisdom's biography is quite long. I'm not going to read it. You can read it in chapter 8. I'll just highlight it. Her resume includes, she says, I own counsel, sound judgment, understanding, and real power. I bring riches and honor. She says, my fruit is better than gold. My path is righteous and just. And then it turns out, who knew? She was there at the beginning of the cosmos. You can read this in chapter 8, verses 23 to 31. She says, I was appointed from eternity from the beginning before the world began. Now remember, this is what kind of literature we're talking about here. This is poetic literature. It describes what's true, but it does so in poetic ways. And so if I say to my wife, Christy, you're as lovely as a silver moon on a summer night, she's back there smiling at me, just like, five people in the sanctuary. This is true. It's true. It describes the fact that she is beautiful and heartwarming to me. It doesn't mean I think she's a lifeless planetary object. And so remember, this is poetic. What's important about wisdom's biography personified as a woman is this. You want to know how the world works? You want to know how to navigate life with all of its problems and pitfalls? You need to get to know wisdom intimately. After all, who would know better how to act in the world in right and appropriate ways than the one through whom the world was made? You want to know how to thrive in the world? Want to know how to see what's true and real? Want to know how to deal with COVID-19? You want to get to know wisdom. Okay, then check out wisdom's resume. If you really want to know how to know who, how to get along in the world, check out wisdom's resume. So, you can read that for yourself, but let's look at folly's resume. It's pretty short, so I'll read it for you. It's chapter 9, verse 13. The woman folly is loud, she's undisciplined, and without knowledge. That doesn't sound good. So imagine this on eHarmony. Hi, my name is Folly. I'm loud, undisciplined, and without knowledge. Let's get together soon. Now, who would be interested in that? Well, the simple and the foolish are. Folly is almost always louder than wisdom. Folly tends to shout. Wisdom tends to speak quietly and confidently. Okay, final point, which is also going to be our application. It remains for us to choose and keep on choosing what we want to give our lives to. And we've seen how both wisdom and folly have issued invitations for us to join them, dine with them, enter into relationship with them. And the words used in Hebrew indicate intimacy. This is not coffee dates. This is not casual friendship. This is offers to have deep, exclusive relationship. And so in Proverbs, we're being encouraged, in fact, implored to enter into relationship with wisdom, to walk the path of wisdom versus folly, which brings up an important question. How does this poetic picture of marriage to wisdom versus marriage to folly actually play out in real life? Because we all know we sometimes walk in folly, we sometimes walk in wisdom. Sometimes in the same day, sometimes the same hour. I spoke with a lady last week who's worked in disaster response in Kansas for 15 years. She said, "We've activated guardsmen to western Kansas for a blizzard, eastern Kansas for a flood, and central Kansas for a tornado." The same month, I said? She said, "No, the same day." We can all feel like Kansas weather sometimes. It doesn't seem possible to be in exclusive relationship with wisdom or folly. We all feel like polygamous. We feel sometimes like we're married to both wisdom and folly. But remember, this is just a poetic picture of reality. But this question I'm asking helps us see, how do we walk in this exclusive relationship with Lady Wisdom? And to describe that, I'll bring out one of my favorite phrases. Our wisdom walk is about direction, not perfection. It's about perfection in direction, not perfection in every single action. And so let's use the marriage and the path analogy to see how this might play out. I've been married to Christy for almost 37 years. I've never desired to not be married to her. We've been faithful to each other, yet I've often been unkind or I've been uncaring. I've sometimes not treated her like God wants me to. She's failed towards me many times in 37 years as well. But our marriage is good, life-giving, enduring. When we mess up, we fess up, we move on. Ours is a good path in a fixed direction. It's not a marriage of perfection. And so it's possible to walk, let's jump to the path analogy, not the marriage analogy. It's possible to walk a long way, a single direction on a path, and yet venture off into the ditch, or sit down and say, "I'm tired of this," or turn around for a minute and go the other way. Sometimes we're walking the right path, and we've got a terrible attitude, the wrong attitude inside of us. But overall, it's not been a walk of perfection, but it has been a walk of direction. And so what does this look like practically? You say, "Well, I want an exclusive relationship with wisdom. I prefer what she offers. Now what?" And to answer that question, let's look at a topic we discussed earlier in the year. And it has to do with the location of Lady Wisdom and Woman Folly's houses. And that location speaks to what it means to have exclusive relationship with them. Look at chapter 9, verses 1 to 3. Wisdom has built her house. She's hewn out its seven pillars. She's prepared her meat and mixed her wine. She set her table. She's going to have us to dinner. She calls out her maids. She calls out from the highest point of the city. And look at Folly. The woman Folly is loud, undisciplined, without knowledge. She sits at the door of her house on a seat at the highest point of the city. So Wisdom and Folly both live at the high points of the city. Only one building was built at the high place of the city, the temple. Both temples to false gods and the temple of the true God were placed at the highest points of the city. Jerusalem's temple was located, still is, on the Temple Mount. So if you read in the book of Acts or other places in the Bible, when people were north of Jerusalem, they spoke of going up to Jerusalem, even though technically they were traveling south, which we'd usually call down. The point was they were going up to this place of worship. The high point of the community was a place where worship was centered. And that's where Folly and Wisdom live. And so the practical application of living a life of wisdom, of spending our lives and not wasting them, has to do with worship. All of us have a throne in our hearts. We're all little mini kingdoms. And whoever or whatever is on that throne rules our kingdom. So again, our key verse for this year, Proverbs 4:23, is so important. Above all else, guard your hearts. It is the wellspring, the source of your life. Our hearts are the command posts, the throne rooms. And from there, the courses of our lives are set, and from our hearts, we worship. In Topeka and in every state, there are these things called SEOCs, State Emergency Operations Center. In those places, there are a lot of people with various levels of responsibility and expertise. Lots of people giving instructions and direction, going back and forth, but at any one time, there's one person in charge. And in your heart, there are many competing voices and desires and struggles and dreams, but there's always at any given time one person in charge. One voice that can overrule all the other voices. One voice that sits on the throne and directs the course of your life. And wisdom is when Christ sits there. Folly is when anything or anyone else sits there. And so our lives, this walk of direction, not perfection, are the continual process of rethroning Christ as King of our hearts. This means a whole lot of repenting and returning to the good path. Now, what's happened in the past months is this massive worldwide exposure of the impotence of idols. Health can't be king. Money can't be king. Freedom to move about and do what we want can't be king. Government can't be king. Security can't be king. Life itself can't be king. These are inadequate to sit on the throne. They're inadequate to direct the command posts of our hearts. So what idols has this time revealed in your life? It's revealed some from me. What does it look like to truly make Christ your king now? Wisdom's best question is always that question, who sits on the throne? That's really another way of saying the beginning of wisdom is the fear of the Lord. So who you worship at the core of your being, who sits on the throne, who sits in the command post, that sets the course of your life. And wisdom, Christ himself, calls out from the heights of the city. He calls out to us inside our hearts, crown me Lord of your heart. Don't worship idols. They will fail you when you most need them. Dethrone fear. Don't worship medical, government, financial saviors. Be thankful for all that, but worship Christ alone. And then go with confidence and wisdom into your circumstances without being tossed around by those circumstances. So I'm going to give you about a minute to pray. There's going to be some prompts on the screen. So take a minute, pray, and then Rodney will come back up and finish this up. So let's pray together.